Guillermo Mash with the October 3rd edition of Youth for Justice here on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Youth for Justice. Usually we have people that aren't pushing 60. You know, our usual and customary host, Isaac Hempseed. He's recovering from maybe the same thing I heard earlier this week. Flu-like symptoms. So I'm filling in, but I'm going to be filling in with youth. And I'm really pleased to have a show today in promotion of the Housing Democracy Forum, We the Renters. We the Renters. Saturday, October 5th. It's coming Saturday. It's going to be at the Dorothy F. Johnson Center, 16th Street in Chico. And lunch provided, daycare provided. And most of all, you're going to have some love and care from some of the best people in Chico. Our young folks that are out there supporting of the people, by the people, for the people. So you're going to be hearing from Lauren Kohler and Jeremy Markley with the Chico DSA. It's actually a rebroadcast of a show that Stephen Trudy put together for The Real Issue Wednesday. So you're going to hear that. And I'm putting together some clips around the quote-unquote Democratic Socialists of America, i.e., you know, I think that really came to fruition back in the New Deal days where, you know what, we are a nation constitutionally bound of the people, by the people, for the people. It's not of the corporations, by the corporations, for the corporations like we have today. And I think we need to strike out, strike hard, strike fast to bring our country back in line with the morals that we had back in the founding father days. I lived in a state called Live Free or Die, and we were there for the people. We weren't there for corporations and big profit and fascist-like views. We're here for the people. And we're going to start off with a clip of the leading leader in our Congress, Alexandria from The Leader. I view her as... quote-unquote, democratic socialism, i.e. of the people, by the people, for the people, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, here on People Power Radio.
My guest tonight is the 28-year-old progressive activist who defeated a 10-term congressman in the Democratic primary for New York's 14th congressional district. Please welcome House Democratic nominee Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The show.
Thank you.
Congratulations on being the nominee, and more importantly, congratulations on being both the dream of half the country and a nightmare of another half.
I'll take it.
You seem like you have been taking it. The term democratic socialist mm-hmm. has never felt like it has more weight to it than mm-hmm. now. We hear your name on the news every single day. Mm-hmm. When you use that term, what do you want people to understand by it?
Well, I think what I want people to understand is that we live in a society that is capable. We are capable of ensuring that we have basic frameworks where people can be covered by health insurance, can send their kids to college, where we can pursue a very bold action on climate change and save our future, and that is part of a moral and ethical economy, and that we can legislate from that value, and where it is possible, I believe we are morally obliged to pursue it.
Right. Now, when you speak about that, it seems like a logical idea for a politician to have in America. The way you are framed, the way you are framed is oftentimes the crazy socialist who wants to turn America into Venezuela and into Cuba.
Right.
Now, what I find interesting is, you know, when I think of ideas of socialism, I go, okay, there's maybe Venezuela and there's Cuba, and then I go, but then there's also Norway and Denmark.
Right.
Do you think there's a branding disconnect connected in America between some of these policy ideas, between generations maybe?
Well, between generations, I absolutely think so. I think us as millennials, we grew up in a time, we came of age in a time of 9/11 happened in middle school.
Right.
The financial crisis happened in college. We have never really known or grown up in a time of true economic prosperity in the United States. We came of age in a time of hyper concentration of wealth with the very tippy top of people in the country and the world.
Right.
And so for us to have access, we also grew up seeing our peers in other countries, like in the UK and Canada, with single-payer healthcare systems. We grew up with peers being able to go to college without, you know, graduating with a mortgage's worth of debt. Mm-hmm. And we know that economically there's a better way because it has already been done.
Right. When you get spoken about, and this has been interesting, it's been a conversation that I haven't just heard from Republicans, which you would expect. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed some establishment Democrats who have come out and said, oh, I've seen the young lady Ocasio-Cortez say the things she says, but it's a little unrealistic. Mm-hmm. You know, she has to be a bit more realistic to move things forward. Mm-hmm. Do you think that when you move into Congress, if you were to win that seat, would you be in a position where you would have to augment your views? Or do you think that you would come to an impasse with other Democrats?
Well, I think I often say in terms of my style, I'm very idealistic and optimistic about my values and my goals and where I think we should head. But I'm very pragmatic in how we head there.
Right.
And so I think that I'm willing to work with folks in the direction that I think we need to head.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm not a take no prisoners kind of person as much as Fox News and all of these folks want to portray me as. But I think it's about getting to where we need to be, you know, and that may mean some spirited conversation within the party, but that doesn't mean we can't. I really do believe that we have a much longer path to travel together than before we travel apart.
When you look at ideas you have, like supporting a minimum wage, mm-hmm. you are very pro the idea of people earning enough to make a living.
Yeah,
right?
Shocking.
Crazy ideas. But then there are those who say, look, I agree with you, mm-hmm. but how do you pay for this? How do you make it mm-hmm. economically feasible? There are some who argue and say, I hear what you're saying, Ms. Cortez, and I'm with you, but a $15 minimum wage may stifle economic mm-hmm. growth.
Well, first we see, for example, studies in the city of Seattle that have implemented $15 minimum wage show that that is not the case. Secondly, one of the biggest problems that we have is 200 million Americans make less than $20,000 a year. That's 40% of this country. And how can we have an economy that grows? How can we build wealth as an economy if a large plurality of Americans are too poor to participate in it? Raising the minimum wage to a living wage will expand our economy. It will create wealth in our economy, and it will increase economic activity in this country. So for those that say it's unrealistic, this, that, and the other, it comes back to money and politics. Who's financing your campaign?
Right.
And are the folks financing your campaign, are the private equity groups financing your campaign? It's not a coincidence that they profit off of low wages.
Do you worry that when you get into the halls of Congress, that you may become infected by that money? And the reason I ask this is because I've seen many politicians who start out with beautiful ideals. Mm-hmm. And once they get into the machine, they'll tell you that from the inside it's so different. You have to get money from big corporations and you have to start working with business. Yeah. Do you worry that maybe your ideals will be met with reality once you get to the Capitol?
Well, I think that what makes our campaign and my candidacy a little different is that I have taken a public pledge not to accept any corporate PAC money whatsoever.
Listeners just joining, you are listening to a production of Youth for Justice here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And this month we are focusing on the Housing Democracy Forum, We the Renters, this Saturday the 5th, 2 p.m. at the Dorothy Johnson Center in Chico on 16th Street. Lunch provided, daycare provided. And we're in the midst of a clip with the leader of Congress on the issue of the people, by the people, for the people, otherwise known as Democratic Socialists of America. Our AOC is her call letters here on People Power Radio.
And we are now starting to see a movement in Congress. I think there's about eight members of Congress, I believe they're all Democrats, that have accepted that pledge. But I actually think I may be one of the only ones that actually got elected for the first time on that. Many folks got elected with some corporate money, right, and then they swore it off after. But I think I'm one of the first to get elected right out of the gate without any corporate PAC money, which gives me, I believe, a very large degree of independence. I am a little, I'm a little afraid because I know that the culture of Congress is one that I think the majority of Americans are just exasperated with.
Right.
And to a certain extent, you have to be kind of an emissary in that there are ways that you get things done. And there's the implication that you need to get committee assignments by purchasing them through fundraising, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and all of that. And I think it's one of those things where, I think, first of all, I got elected on not taking corporate PAC money, and I have absolutely no intention of changing that whatsoever.
Right.
And so it's really just about learning to navigate that space with that foundation.
You've seen some of the older politicians and more establishment politicians within the Democratic Party, mm-hmm, saying, I like what Alexandria Cortez is all about, but, mm-hmm, she's scaring away Midwestern voters. Mm-hmm. She needs to temper her message because that's going to lose her the support of Midwestern voters, which is weird because you're not,
yeah,
first of all, representing them.
No. No.
But also, how do you respond to that idea that you are, in fact, creating an unappealing view of what the Democratic Party is?
So earlier this week or last week, a few days ago, everything's a blur. I don't even, what is time? but I was in Kansas, and I intentionally went with Senator Sanders, actually, in an extremely deep red district, the district that the Koch brothers live in. It was a Republican plus 20 district. And a non-corporate candidate, progressive candidate, campaigned in that district and turned it to R plus 6.
Wow.
He shaved 14 points off of the Republican advantage in that district. This was a district that everybody gave up on. They said, this is too bad, like,
right,
too far gone. He went in there anyway, and he cut 14 points off of the Republican lead. And we went in there, and on 1 p.m. on a Friday, in the middle of the workday, we turned out 4,000 to 5,000 people in the middle of Wichita for a rally. And I think what we need to remember is that it was the Midwest that was the source of the progressive movement originally in the United States of America. It was workers in Indiana, in Michigan, in Kansas that bought into the New Deal, that organized, that unionized their labor, mm-hmm, that got a 40-hour work week and a two-day weekend. That came from the Midwest.
Right.
And I believe that it will come from the Midwest again.
All right. We're going to take a quick break from this Daily Show interview with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez here on KTFR 90.1 FM to give us some shout outs to our wonderful underwriters who make it all possible, along with our generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture, producing community festivals and events, including Arttoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit them at friendsofthearts.upstate.org. We're also made possible by the bankruptcy law offices of Michael O'Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael O'Hayes offers complimentary consultations and payment plans for Chapter 7 and Chapter 13 bankruptcy and has been serving Northern California residents for more than 30 years. The telephone number for Michael O'Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916, or visit him, mhayslaw.com.
When you look at the power of labels, mm-hmm, in politics, you understand how powerful a label can be, that's attached to your name or an idea. Do you ever consider taking socialist out of your label? And I asked this as an argument that I saw where it was an interesting idea where someone said millennials in this generation, mm-hmm, haven't been indoctrinated in the same way against socialism,
right,
as the older generation has.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, I was like, I wonder if Alexandria Cortez would say, no, I don't mind not being called a socialist, but these are still my platform ideas. Or do you feel like you should be able to run on the platform and say you, mm, are who you are? Which one would you prefer to go with?
Well, I think my strength is that I am honest and I am authentic. And I think that even Republicans like write letters to our campaign saying thank you. And one of the reasons they do that, A, is because getting money out of politics is a bipartisan and postpartisan issue.
Right.
Everybody recognizes that it's a problem. But then B, I think people appreciate that I am honest and that I'm not trying to not be who I am in order to get you to like me.
Right.
You know, I'm here. This is what it's about. Medicare for all, tuition-free public college, a Green New Deal. That is what I campaigned as. And that is that I think it's also important to say that this socialist label is something that I think the media cares more about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't knock on a person's door and is like, hey, let me tell you about socialism. Like, that's...
Yeah, that wouldn't...
That's
wouldn't
not work. How I campaign.
Yeah, that's like you, Jehovah's Witnesses. That's
right,
like, yeah.
Right, exactly.
That wouldn't
exactly.
work.
Yeah, exactly. I also think that I don't knock on a person's door and say, hey, let me tell you about being a Democrat. No, I don't say that. I speak to people's needs. And, you know, if Fox News and if media want to continue using this word, they're
right.
going to use the word. I think by me saying, oh, no, I'm not, this, that, and the other, it just becomes a distraction. We're here to talk about wages. We're here to talk about education. We're here to talk about saving our planet. We're here to talk about a carbon tax. We're here to talk about people paying their fair share. And we're here to talk about saving the country,
right.
frankly.
Before I let you go. Then that is one of the key things that I want to speak to you about then is those ideas, I think most people would agree on, especially if they don't know the label that they're attached to.
Right.
You know? But then the pragmatic side of it comes in, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
How do you pay for these? You know, you always see people coming in with economic arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, look, these numbers don't really add up. You know, in order to get health care for everybody, this is what it would cost.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be troubling. Even if you reverse the Republican tax deal, that's only going to make up 5% of what mm-hmm. we need to pay for Medicare for all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you pay for education for all? How do you pay
yeah.
for all of these ideas?
So this is an excellent, excellent question. And in fact, there's a lot of back of the envelope stuff based on our values. So, for example, I sat down with a Nobel Prize economist last week. I can't believe I can say that. It's really weird. But one of the things that we saw is if people pay their fair share, if corporations and the ultra wealthy, for example, as Warren Buffett likes to say, if he paid as much as his secretary paid, 15%, if he paid a 15% tax rate, if corporations paid, if we reversed the tax bill, but went raised our corporate tax rate to 28%, which is not even as high as it was before.
Right.
If we do those two things and also close some of those loopholes, that's $2 trillion right there. That's $2 trillion in 10 years, and it's wide. One of the wide estimates is that it's going to take $3 to $4 trillion to transition us to 100% renewable energy economy. So we got $2 trillion from folks paying their fair share, which they were not paying before the Trump tax bill.
Right.
They weren't paying that before the Trump tax bill. If we get people to pay their fair share, that's $2 trillion in 10 years. Now, if we implement a carbon tax on top of that, so that we can transition and financially incentivize people away from fossil fuels. If we implement a carbon tax, that's an additional amount of a large amount of revenue that we can have. And then the last key, which is extremely, extremely important, is reprioritization. Just last year, we gave the military a $700 billion budget increase, which they didn't even ask for. They're like, we don't want another fighter jet. Like, they're like, don't give us another nuclear bomb. You know?
Right.
They didn't even ask for it, and we gave it to them. And so a lot of what we need to do is reprioritize what we want to accomplish as a nation. And really what this is about is saying healthcare is important enough for us to put first. Education is important enough for us to put first. And that is a decision that requires political and moral courage from both parts of the aisle. Period.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, everybody.
All right, Guillermo Mash back in the studio here, filling in for your customary voice for Youth for Justice. My gosh, it's going on 2.5 years since Isaac Hempseed took this over. And I started doing just the sound gag. But anyway, it's always a joy to be on the radio promoting younger people and their causes. And I'm here to promote this. We, the Renters Unite. And it's a housing democracy forum. That's going to be Saturday, this Saturday the 5th, 2 p.m., Dorothy Johnson Center, 775 East 16th Street, Chico. Lunch and daycare provided. And that's hosted by the Chico chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, along with sponsorships by the Chico Peace and Justice Center, Tenants Together Without a Roof, yeah, and Chico Housing Action Team. I'm really pleased to actually do a re-air. It was a really nice interview. I had a chance to pre-record that Stephen Trudy aired on this week's The Real Issue, and he actually did a show somewhat like this, where he focused on the of the people, by the people, for the people, as defined and actioned by our younger crowd, mostly the younger crowd among the Democratic Socialists of America, here on People Power Radio. Once again, for listeners just joining, we do have Jeremy Markley and Lauren Kohler with the Democratic Socialists of America, the Chico chapter, and they're here to talk about their tenants forum on Saturday. And you know what? I'd like to start with you, Jeremy, because I think you've got some actual tenant story you want to relay on your situation here in Chico.
Sure. Like a lot of people in town, after the fire, I got a passive-aggressive letter from my landlord saying that my lease would not be renewed no matter what I did. I was a perfect renter, if I do say so myself. Paid rent always on time. Heck, I even tried to fix my own stuff so I wouldn't put in a work order. But it didn't matter. Outside of town, property developer bought the whole apartment complex and told everybody they were going to leave. Why? So that they could hike up the rent faster. State law says that if you have a new tenant, you can increase rent faster than 10% lease over lease. Whereas if you have one person, then you can't. So it was a money grab.
Yeah, and that's just one of hundreds and hundreds of stories, similar stories.
Thousands.
Thousands. Thousands. Yeah, there probably is thousands of stories like that.
I'd be shocked if there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Lauren, what do you have to add in regards to the tenant forum and the rights of folks in this community for tenant advocacy?
Yeah, so our forum is really about, we want people to know, renters to know that they're not alone. And like Jeremy said, there's probably thousands of these stories, but we don't really have a place to talk to each other about them. There's no area for us to talk to each other about this. So we're trying to create a platform for people. One of the aspects of our event is a people's mic where people can just share their stories. They can share what's going on with their rental situations. I also just got an email from someone saying how they were forced to buy their home or get out because when the fire hit and people were trying to sell their homes, they were renters and they got the option of buying their home or getting out. And they knew they wouldn't be able to find a place, so now they're stuck in this mortgage that they really can't afford. So we want people to be able to share their stories, stories like Jeremy's and stories like this one, with each other so that everybody knows that we're not alone.
That's a big deal for me because, you know, the whole isolation thing is huge. But I would lean on a public comment I heard from Mike Trollander. It's just someone I know in the community. He's a small developer. He actually was at the Affordable Housing Forum. But bottom line, it wasn't the exact words, but he spoke really passionate at Chico City Council about he's just sick and tired of people, you know, talking about renters as if they're like some sort of necessary evil and not a person. What would you guys add to that?
There are more renters in Chico than there are homeowners, and it is getting more that way every single year. It was getting that way even more so since before the fire. In fact, it's not only like that for Chico, it's like that for America. We are heading very, very quickly toward a country full of renters, let alone a city.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's completely right in that renters have been left out completely out of the conversation and in a lot of ways are treated as not actually a necessary factor in the story of what we're going to do about housing in the city. And that's a dead end.
And along with that, one of the things that we're going to talk about at our Housing Democracy Forum is kind of what housing could look like in Chico. You know, there's a lot of plans for affordable housing, but they don't seem to be working. So we want to get renters into the conversation. It doesn't need to be just, you know, developers in the city talking about this. Renters are stakeholders in this conversation, and their ideas matter just as much.
And listeners just joining, we are talking with Lauren Kohler and Jeremy Markley with the Democratic Socialists of America, the Chico chapter. And we're talking about their forum. They're going to have this Saturday at the Dorothy Johnson Center. Maybe you can restate the particulars on when it's going to be and maybe land a little longer, Lauren, on what people can expect when they get there.
Yeah, so we're starting at 2 p.m. There's going to be lunch. We're going to go over a little bit, you know, have presentations on the facts about being a renter in Chico right now. And then we're also going to let people present to us the facts about being a renter in Chico. We're going to have a people's mic where people can share their stories, what's going on in Chico as a renter. We're going to have the Sacramento Tenants Union come up and give a presentation about what a tenants union is. We're going to have a presentation on social housing and some affordable housing options for Chico. And then we're going to kind of end on a note of having people share their ideas about what housing could look like in Chico and kind of ask, what do you want to see in Chico for your housing?
Do you see this as part of like a canvassing effort? I actually sign people up for a tenants union, local tenants union, or maybe a little, maybe extrapolate a little bit on the union aspect of this?
The goal is, you know, to create a citywide tenants union. But it's not something that we as the Chico DSA chapter want to build. It needs to be built by tenants. It needs to be built by the people who are going to be in it. So we're not trying to, you know, create an organization and hand it off. We're trying to help facilitate and build that. So we are definitely hoping that, you know, some people who are super excited about organizing come out of the event and are excited. But we're not, you know, creating a tenants union and handing it over.
Just to sort of add on to what Lauren's saying, just to clarify what a tenants union is for, because I think it's kind of an idea that a lot of people don't even realize that you could do. The goal of a tenants union is to bring together all of the renters in a place so that they can coordinate when landlords are treating them badly. There are lots and lots of laws already on the books in the state of California that a lot of renters just don't know that they have on their side. Landlords take advantage of this all the time. They depend on their people not knowing what the rules are, and they depend on the fact that they have all the resources and all the leverage in that dynamic. And so the goal of a tenants union, put simple, is to get everybody together so that we have the resources to stick up for each other when one of us is trying to get screwed over.
Another thing that a tenants union does is it kind of creates an organization, an association of tenants for when things happen with, you know, citywide policy about renters. It's an easy way to contact tenants and get some representatives because we don't have an organization right now. So it's really hard to get feedback from a lot of renters really quickly.
You know, I don't give out seal of approvals lightly, but, you know, I've been involved at some level with the DSA, and I know many or most of the folks in the group, and it's just a wonderful group of kind of quote-unquote younger crowd here in Chico that, you know, have daytime jobs and they're putting in efforts volunteering for organizations like this. So maybe some closing comments around what you really like about being part of the Chico DSA and this tenants forum.
I really love being part of this chapter for a number of reasons. We're pushing for change wherever we can. You know, we're not like holding out for like big change. We're like, hey, how can we improve people's lives as soon as possible, as much as possible? So that's kind of what we're doing with housing is we're trying to build systems where people can take care of each other. And I really love that that's one of the main focuses of our chapter right now.
Yeah. And I think that I'm in the organization for similar reasons. Regular people don't really have much control over what happens in this city. And I think that that ought to change. And I'm appreciative of the fact that at least some of us are trying to come together to make it right. And so I'm really proud to participate.
Yeah, I love the mantra, you know, the Democratic Socialism of America, man. They're by the people, for the people, of the people, all people. Come on out Saturday, 2 o'clock, Dorothy Johnson Center.
Come on out.
Listeners just joining, you are indeed listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, the Youth for Justice program, where we are highlighting something I'm really excited about. We the Renters, Housing Democracy Forum. That's going to be this Saturday, the 5th, 2 to 4 p.m., Dorothy F. Johnson Center, 775 East 16th Street, Chico, California. And that's sponsored by Tenants Together, Chico Peace and Justice Center, Chat Without a Roof, It's put on and organized by the Democratic Socialists of America, the Chico chapter. And we just heard a re-air of an interview with Lauren Kohler and Jeremy Markley, two members of the Chico DSA, around how excited they are and some of the issues that are going to be covered at the We the Renters Housing Democracy Forum. Time for a little bit of underwriters. Youth for Justice made possible. Generous contributions. KZFR supporters and listeners. Listeners, you are important. And by Labor Finders, helping businesses find qualified temporary help. Whether it's skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled workers and employees, Labor Finders can get the right person for your production needs. Labor Finders also covers advertising, recruitment, payroll, social security, unemployment, workers' comp, administrative costs, and more. Details, 530-433-4060, and get the job done. Also made possible by Ag Mart, AG Mart, now open at 1334 Park Avenue, offering a complete line of hydroponic and organic gardening supplies for all your growing needs, specializing in hemp and cannabis production. AG Mart is now open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the corner of 14th and Park Avenue in Chico, and can be reached by calling 809-2367 and at chicomart.com. It's always my pleasure to have Robert Trausch, Bob Trausch, on the phone from Chico Housing Action Team. And they're a co-sponsor of the Tenants Forum that the Democratic Socialists of America, the Chico chapter, is putting on this Saturday at the Dorothy Johnson Center. And Bob's going to tell you why you need to be there, just like I'm going to be.
Well, you know, something has happened in our community and across the country, which is all the money is going to the top and not to the bottom. And what we need to do is have some of that money come back down. We have three things happen in our community. We have housing prices going out of sight. We have homeless people from the Ridge Fire and in Chico that are unhoused. And we have land prices that we can't afford to buy land and actually build on it. When I meet with the county and the state and even the city, they're talking about affordable housing at $285,000 to $350,000. Right. There's an impossibility for any people on low income or part-time work to be able to work. So we need to do something. And the only way to do that is to meet and start figuring out ways to impact the community, to advocate for change. And I think some of that is happening. I just went to a seminar with the county, and they're actually talking about working together with organizations to make a difference. Now, we need to have that happen in the city of Chico as well. So we're kind of excited about some of the things the county is actually talking about with as far as funding sources for actually truly affordable housing for people who are low income or on SSI, SDI, or low Social Security. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, as we should be, because maybe I'll end it with this, Bob. It was such a wonderful, it's always nice to sit with you and Leslie, you know, with Blackbird a couple of months ago, talking about what we could do, you know, after this affordable housing forum. And you were so passionate, Bob, about we need to lobby, we need to canvass. So maybe give us a pitch for that, and then why this housing forum on Saturday is so important.
Well, because we learn how to be advocates for change and to hold people's, you know, so to speak, foot to the fire. We need to let them know what we as citizens need and want. That's why they're there. That's why people who are elected to office by us are there to have our voice for us. And so it's really important for us to get together and be able to come up with policy, come up with change, and let the city and the county and the state know this is what we need to make a difference in our communities. And that takes dollars. It doesn't take wealthy people buying credits for poor people and getting outrageous interest and tax write-offs. It takes a commitment from the cities, the counties, and the state to make sure that we get the land necessary and the finances necessary to actually impact the lower income level people that are in our community that do most of the hard work in our communities. And so we're not taking care of them. So I don't want to see Chico turn into a wealthy community with just the wealthy being able to afford to live here. This has to be a community that is supported by all sections of the community, from lower income to middle income to higher income. And that's changing in our community. So we have to become advocates for that change.
Yeah, and communicators. So I'll end it by kind of saying it was wonderful, too, to have a couple of beers with you at Burgers and Brew, you know, talking about how important it is, you know, when we're advocates for change, you and I and others in the community, you can't possibly over-communicate too much. And that means both sides of the equation. Maybe you can end with that, Bob.
Exactly. We have to be able to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Like I say, the most important job for Chad. Now, we have probably almost 130 people in housing right now. And with our newest program, we're going to have probably around 200 people, not that long from now, off the streets and in housing. But our most important job is to be advocates for change, the change that goes back to where we were before when we have money available in our communities to build affordable housing for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do. And you only can do that if you're an advocate and you keep pushing and pushing and pushing for sensible, intelligent, true change to in our community to be able to allow everyone to have the opportunity to be housed, whether that's an apartment, a tiny home, a house, whatever it happens to be. But that's our job.
All right, Robert Trouse, get back to work now, okay? I know I interrupted
you. That's what
you.
I'm doing.
All right, my friend. Pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, that was Bob Trouse, founding member, board member of Chico Housing Action Team, giving some powerful words around the work he's doing and the work that's being carried on in the Housing Democracy Forum this coming Saturday at the Dorothy F. Johnson Center. Doors at 2, lunch provided, daycare provided, and I hope to see you there. I think it's a really important issue and a really important topic of kind of gathering people, canvassing people for renters. The vast majority of folks living in Chico rent. And it's about time they had a voice. It's far beyond about time they had a voice. So I'm pleased to have put this show together around that. Next up, coming after this show, Youth for Justice, Beatle Nation. Always fun to see Dina and her daughter and some of her friends that come in here and do just a wonderful 30 minutes of Beatles music, music we all know and love. Speaking of music we all know and love, I'm going to take you out with some music I know and love all the way up to the top of the 7 o'clock hour. And always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful. All right, as promised, I'm going to take you out with some music. And we are in memorial here this week. You know, too young to die. Too young to die. Kim Shattuck. She was only 56. Singer of the Muffs and the Pixies. Dead. It's 56. And I pulled some music out of our digital library here at KZBR 90.1 FM. We're going to play the first 8 songs off of Indie Cindy, released 2014 here on Peek About Radio.
Yeah. I get no satisfaction from your very recent sightings.
transparent.